Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
With some new laws coming online or being proposed, some present and former police officials and others are expressing concerns about laws they consider anti-police. This weekend, we're going to talk about a few. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guests this weekend are three former top police officials, city and suburban, but the concerns they have been voiced by others, and the laws or proposals are part of what a number of people think of as police reforms. So that means there's a lot to talk about. You've got people on both sides. But my first guest is someone who has been on this program a number of times. Thomas Weitzel is the former police chief of suburban Riverside. He held that job from 2008 through the spring of 2021. He's been outspoken on policing and the law and highly critical of outgoing state's attorney Kim Fox. William Joyce retired just last winter as chief of the South Chicago Heights Police Department. That's a position he held since 2007. And Eugene Roy is a former chief of detectives for the Chicago Police Department. Now retired from that job, he is a public safety advocate and a consultant on policing and officer wellness. And we are having this discussion via Zoom conferencing, and I thank all three of you for joining me for this coming weekend. Tom Weitzel, let's start with you. Legislation sponsored by Chicago State Representative Justin Slaughter would restrict the kind of minor offenses that police could use to stop a car, among them driving with an expired sticker, improper lane usage, defective mirrors, or not wearing a seatbelt. And the concern from some lawmakers is that these so-called pretextual stops sometimes escalate quickly and disproportionately target African Americans, Latinos. But you see this proposal as wrongheaded. Can you talk a little bit about that? Why is it wrongheaded?
Well, thanks for having me. And you're absolutely right. I actually think it's ridiculous. It's what you just cited are all against the law, or they're in the current Illinois Vehicle Code, right? So these are lawful traffic stops that officers make that they're trying to eliminate or reduce. And if you want to change the law, my position has always been, and the same as with Kim Fox when her office policies, is go to Springfield and get it changed. You know, they're not doing that. They're putting their policies in or floating their ideas. Now, he's pulled that back somewhat. Okay, he said he's not going to run it, but I can tell you that probably isn't true. He's just not running it now. But as you probably know, Craig, there was a law that was I think it actually went into effect where you're going to get free passes for three citations. So that's just a version of the same statute that he wanted to pass in the first place. So what's happening is instead of defund the police, they're backdooring this by passing legislation that takes tools away from law enforcement.
Well, let's talk a little bit. I want to hear what the others think about this. Chief, or former chief Roy, talk to me about why you think it's important to be able to make stops like this, assuming you do.
Assuming you do, first of all, I'm going to confirm what Chief Wetzel said. They're against the law. The law is the law. You can't selectively enforce the law. When you start going down that road of selectively enforcing this, but not that, it causes all sorts of ripple effects in the criminal justice system, which lead to even bigger problems down the road. What we're seeing with the recent rash of violence in Chicago, we're seeing crews that are using vehicles to go from literally one end of the city to the other and then out to the suburbs and back to the city to commit these heinous gun crimes. And trust me, they are not obeying the traffic laws. It's not a pretext if you see a violation and you stop a car. That's what we want our police to do. That's what we want our beat officers to do. That is how they protect people. That is how they prevent crimes. And in the other end, that is how they solve crimes. They see a car that's got missing taillights. They go to stop it. They find out that it's just been used in an armed robbery. You know, you're taking a valuable tool away from the police. And trust me, if you've anybody who's driven at night or even during the daytime, I dare them to tell me how many people they've looked at. Can they tell the race, the sex, or any other distinguishing factors of the driver of that vehicle from the distance? We all know the answer to that. The claim, the basis for this legislation is preposterous.
Well, William Joyce, the fear of a number of people is that, first off, let's look at it from the police officer's side. Vehicle stops are among the most dangerous thing police officers do. They're fraught with the possibility of things going sideways. So if you're stopping somebody for a sticker, a bad sticker, or not making a turn properly, that's not really, I mean, is that really what you're looking for? Or is that a possibility that you're walking into something else?
That starts the stop. We're all familiar with something called a Terry stop. Terry versus Ohio, I believe it was in the 1960s, where they were challenging stop and frisk, but it was reasonable cause or reasonable suspicion was what a traffic stop or a stop was always based on. And both Tom and Roy talked about tools in the toolbox. We've had too many of our tools removed. I began my law enforcement career in 1973, and I've seen a lot of changes, but there have been changes to the good. The foundation of our training, and I started in the Chicago Police Department in 1973, was aggressive and preventive patrol. And there has to be two elements present for a crime to be committed, opportunity and desire. And the elimination of desire is very difficult, but aggressive prosecution is meant to reduce the desire to commit crime. And then education and aggressive patrol can greatly reduce the opportunity for crime. So the two elements to commit a crime can be taken away or individually with aggressive and preventive patrol. And these laws are restricting the police from operating with aggressive and preventive patrol.
But how do you keep that aggressive and preventive patrol from becoming more of what some people would say is oppressive, because the police are expecting to find criminal activity or are prepared for it, and people who are in the car may not be engaged in that activity, but things could get out of hand.
That too falls back on training. The officers today have a lot more training than in previous years. Even when I started in 1973, our training was I was in a class that was somewhat of an experiment. They took college graduates, they took police cadets, and they put together a class, and we went through 1,365 hours of training within the Chicago Police Academy. Previous to that, the number of hours that were expected in training was 400 hours. So again, training is important, and I believe that the police departments today, the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standard Board keeps a real close eye and watch on the officers that end their training, and the mandates that we have to train on a regular basis. We have certain mandates that we have to meet annually, including up to police chiefs. Everybody has to keep the training going on, and that's where it can help be helpful as far as restricting and keeping the police officers in line. I agree with Chief Roy when he talked about most of the time you see the car, you don't necessarily see the occupant. And if there's a violation in the car, then of course the car is under the control of the driver, and that's where you make your stop.
Tom Weitzel, let's talk about a real life example of something going wrong. And I preface what I'm going to ask about by pointing out that this is a case that is being investigated by COPA and by the police department, and there are a lot of questions that are not answered in this case. But this was a traffic stop where the car was stopped because it allegedly because the driver wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and ended up with a person being more than nearly 100 bullets were fired, and someone was killed. That is the kind of thing that makes people want to pass a law like this, saying somebody being stopped for a seatbelt violation shouldn't end up dead. What do you say to people like that who say this is not how this is supposed to go?
Well, we missed a really important piece there. First of all, the traffic stop was lawful if he didn't have the seatbelt on, and the police officer was shot in the line of duty. You know, we miss that all the time. That officer, that CPD officer, was shot. They returned fire from what I saw in that video. Gene may know more than me, being a former Chicago police commander. But the officers were responding. There's this narrative out there that they just stopped this car and all of a sudden just opened up fire. That's just a complete false narrative. That didn't happen. The officer was shot in the line of duty. The amount of rounds that were fired by the officers, that is debatable by the amount of officers that were there. But they're reacting to one of their fellow officers being shot in the line of duty. So that narrative being put out there that the police did a pretextual stop and then just assassinated this individual in the motor vehicle is completely a lie.
Yeah, and I don't know that there is a general narrative, at least within the news coverage of this, that he was assassinated. But I do want to say, if someone is being stopped, and this is, again, a question that has to be answered by the investigation, but if a car is being stopped for a seatbelt violation, what happened or what we saw in the video was officers, one car stops that car by blocking it, and officers get out with their guns drawn. That doesn't look like a stop for a seatbelt violation. I mean, one could speculate that they knew more about the car they were stopping than has come to light yet, and that might come out. But what do you do? I mean, should a situation like that wasn't just seatbelt, was it?
It's probably good police work, too. I mean, you're stopping suspicious vehicles or vehicles that match descriptions of violent crimes. An officer's not getting out with the gun still in his holster. So he may have saw the individual with the no seatbelt, but they have intelligence, and that's what they're supposed to do. They have their observations. They know the neighborhood they're policing, and let's be realistic. Absolutely. They're going to at least have their weapon by their side, and probably in that type of case. And as it was, the offender had one ready to point at the officer as he walked up to the car. So, there's a lot more to come out in that case, for sure. But some of that narrative being put out is just about as anti-police as you can get. I mean, even the information being released by COPA, which is supposed to be an organization that withholds, is confidential in their investigation, in my opinion, is anything but confidential in this investigation.
Chief Roy, do you want to say something?
The thing I want to put in, again, building on what Chief Wetzel said, the individual was stopped for violation of Illinois law, okay? It's that simple. How did he choose to react? He didn't react by giving the officer a driver's license, his insurance certificate. He responded by opening fire on the police officers. Game, set, and match. Let's not lose that, you know, in the wave of propaganda that's been put out by the anti-police people. He chose to respond by shooting an on-duty Chicago police officer. You know, and also, let's look about another point that Chief Wetzel brought up. You have to consider the environment where you're at. Does this happen in Chatham, or does this happen in the 11th District? The 11th District, one of the most violent places in the United States, and the murder rate is just incredible. You know, I worked there 36 years ago. I worked there as a beat officer, as a tack officer, as a homicide detective. The level of violence is incomprehensible out there. The officers were justified in protecting themselves, making a stop, and as it should be, as events proved. And I'll put this in context, too. It's not far from where Larry Newman was murdered last week. Retired Chicago police officer was murdered while working on his lawn. You know, maybe a mile and a half away from where Jemani Rivera was shot, murdered. You know, you have to put it in context. What would you do? How would you respond if you were an officer working in that spot? You know, what's reasonable? Mm-hmm. And I think the facts speak for themselves in this case.
Chief Wetzel knows this about me that you might not. I have a son who, at least up until a couple of weeks ago, was a police officer for 7 years, and traffic stops were what he did for a living. He and I have many discussions about these kinds of things. I think William Joyce pointed this out. There are different kinds of training that may be given these days, but are there better ways to do this where if you know you're going after a suspicious vehicle, you simply treat it like it's a suspicious vehicle and don't say, well, it was because he was not wearing a seatbelt. There was something else going on there. Are there different ways of doing it where the tensions aren't heightened every time?
Working in the South suburbs, and we're a smaller department. In Chicago, you knew the cavalry was just a few blocks away. So when you're making a stop, somebody was coming to back you up. In the suburbs, we don't have that luxury. So the suburbs, we have several one-man cars or two-man cars, not heard of, where I was working. And so we always had, I encouraged our officers not to get out of the car until another officer was there. Sometimes you would pull a car in front of the stopped car, sometimes double up behind the stop car, and then approach from two sides of the car. But that, again, that goes into training, and that goes into experience. But I do believe that officers are far better trained today than they've ever been, and I do believe that their protection, and when you talk about approaching a car and the person opens fire, the number of rounds that are fired becomes inconsequential. Because it was an active gunfight. From my understanding, there were that the offender who was shot fired 10 times. So if there's three people there and there's 10, and the person fires 10 rounds, it's an active shootout.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking with a trio of former police officers about an anti-police trend that they see in some legislative proposals and new laws. Tom Wetzel is former police chief of Riverside. William Joyce is the former police chief of South Chicago Heights. And Gene Roy is the former chief of detectives for the Chicago Police Department. Let's move on to a couple of other potential issues here. There's legislation now that is before the Senate that would increase penalties for fleeing police. The Senate Minority Leader John Curran of Downers Grove says that should be now a Class 3 felony. What do you think? What do any of you think of that as a new way of dealing with people when they encounter police? Tom Wetzel?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Fleeing from the police is an epidemic now. I mean, it's almost happening all the time. There's basically three forms of it. You don't stop at all when the police light you up, or the officer stops you and they get out of your car and walk towards your car and they flee, or they're fleeing from a crime and they don't stop until they crash. I'm sure you yourself hear it in the news all the time. So there's very little consequences in Cook County. So I would like to see the state law passed, but they'd also have to enforce it. Because these statutes are being put on the books, and in Cook County, some of them aren't being enforced. And that's because we have to go through the felony review process to get that approved. And, you know, the felony review process is not something that happens in every county in Illinois. So if they do pass this and it is adopted, it needs to be addressed and it needs to be enforced, not just something that somebody gets a soundbite on or a headline.
And for any of you, do you think making something a felony is going to stop it from happening, or does it simply encourage more chases?
Police chases are not allowed in under most circumstances. Although under the circumstances, what our policy is that unless you're pursuing someone who was involved in a forcible felony, then you have to back off. I do think the actual enforcement of the fleeing the police is going to be difficult because the police cannot chase unless there is a forcible felony. So it's almost not consequential to just find them. But again, anything on the books is helpful. And getting felony charges, just as Chief Weitzel had mentioned, is very difficult. We're hoping that we're going to have a new state's attorney soon. And we hope that state's attorney makes some changes with some of the laws. Because one of the things that I looked at when I saw what this discussion was going to be is shoplifting. Where it used to be a felony for shoplifting with more than $300. Now they raised it to $1,000, and most of the shoplifters, the stores are not even prosecuting. It's become ridiculous. And again, in the area where I have been serving, we're losing retail stores because we're at the far south end of Cook County. So a shoplifter gets a slap on the wrist in Cook County, and they go half a mile to a mile south of us to Will County, where they get actual jail time. So what we've done is we've inherited the shoplifters from Will County coming into our municipality to shoplift from our jewel store, from our Walgreens. And again, in talking about state's attorneys, I believe that that's one of the issues that we're really going to have to talk to the next state's attorney to see if they can bring it back to a $300 felony for shoplifting and some jail time.
I think that's an issue that is what got Tom Weitzel and I together for the first time. Is it not possible that people who are lower level, and yeah, I admit it's kind of a myth to say it's just somebody stealing a loaf of bread to feed their family, but isn't it a possibility that people who are much lesser threats to society are getting snared in this when there are bigger fish to fry, and when prosecutions, someone might argue, shouldn't be about more violent crimes that could go unaddressed?
Let's talk about the impact on the community here. First of all, my experience when I came on, I saw a lot of that, you know, the less fortunate shoplifting food. And I'll tell you something, a lot of cops I know, a lot of cops I saw, they generally gave people like that a pass. But we're not talking about that anymore. We're talking about organized crews that are going in, literally taking over Walmarts, Kmarts, major stores like that. And it's not stealing survival food. It's stealing luxuries. It's stealing alcohol. It's stealing steaks, chops, and stuff like that. It's not a survival crime. This is out and out thievery. Now let's talk about, you know, there's problems prosecuting that with the state's attorney. We've talked about the state's attorney at length. We don't need to go down that road anymore with this. But I'd like to point out, take a look at what's happened in Chatham. Those stores that came in there, Walmart, Kmart, some of the others, were touted as being the engines that were going to drive the economic redevelopment of not just Chatham, but Englewood, the entire South Side. These are major, major, you know, Fortune 100 companies. They couldn't take the losses. They closed. They left those neighborhoods. Who suffers? It's the communities. It's the decent, hardworking people. They're the ones that are suffering as a result of this lack of law enforcement, this tolerance, saying, no, we're not going to prosecute anybody for shoplifting unless it's over $1,000. Well, you get a group of 20 people together and they each steal something that's worth $50. You've got your $1,000 threshold right there. But in the name of addressing issues from the past, our prosecutor has decided that she won't prosecute at all. She's not doing anything to improve the safety of the community, the vitality of the community. And if we don't have vital communities where there's stores and schools and it's safe to go to school and it's safe to go to work, you can ride the bus or the L without having to worry about a band of marauders sticking you up, sticking up everybody on the bus, those communities are going to die. And you know what? And then what happens? These poor people that live in Chatham, Englewood, Roseland, what do? They have to go out to South Chicago Heights. They have to drive to Will County or Kankakee, where they can get decent food at a decent price. And of course, they're paying through the nose for gas to get out there to do it. You have to look at the crime is not the only contributing. Shoplifting is not the only thing that's driving the decline of the city. It's the impact on the quality of life. If you had quality of life, it raises, you know, a tide lifts everybody. A rising tide lifts all the ships in the harbor. But what we're seeing is the exact opposite. And that's what you have to look at. That's, to my way of thinking, it's even more important than locking somebody up. Look at the long-term effects. It's destroyed those communities.
Tom Weitzel, what can be done moving forward? And as all of you have pointed out, there's going to be a new state's attorney, one way or the other, whoever it is. What are the kinds of principles that need to be in place to keep the balance so that it's not police in some cases over enforcing and being too hard on people and making people feel afraid of them and not too lax so that the criminals can just run free?
Yeah, I would say there's like really two important positions, or at least two policies they should have. It's not this tough on crime state's attorney. It's just enforce the crime. Enforce what's on the books now. Just enforce what comes in front of your felony review unit. You know, the current legislation needs to be enforced. And second, the next state's attorney needs to build a really good relationship with the police in Cook County. Obviously, Chicago has a lot more volume than a lot of the suburbs do. We all have the same type of crime. We just don't have the volume that the city does. No question about that. But they need to build a better relationship with the detectives, beat officers. And because, you know, unlike Chicago, a lot of times the felony review process is being called in by beat officers in the suburbs. You know, and you would get on the phone and they want detectives, where a lot of these suburbs don't have detectives working at 10 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the morning like Chicago does. But they need to get that relationship with them and get those cases worked up or charged up through the felony review unit.
That's going to have to be the final word. We are out of time. But that was Tom Weitzel, former Riverside police chief. I'd also like to thank Gene Roy, formerly of the Chicago Police Department, and former suburban police chief William Joyce as well from South Chicago Heights. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on our homepage. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dellamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With some new laws coming online or being proposed, some present and former police officials and others are expressing concerns about laws they consider anti-police. This weekend, we're going to talk about a few. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guests this weekend are three former top police officials, city and suburban, but the concerns they have been voiced by others, and the laws or proposals are part of what a number of people think of as police reforms. So that means there's a lot to talk about. You've got people on both sides. But my first guest is someone who has been on this program a number of times. Thomas Weitzel is the former police chief of suburban Riverside. He held that job from 2008 through the spring of 2021. He's been outspoken on policing and the law and highly critical of outgoing state's attorney Kim Fox. William Joyce retired just last winter as chief of the South Chicago Heights Police Department. That's a position he held since 2007. And Eugene Roy is a former chief of detectives for the Chicago Police Department. Now retired from that job, he is a public safety advocate and a consultant on policing and officer wellness. And we are having this discussion via Zoom conferencing, and I thank all three of you for joining me for this coming weekend. Tom Weitzel, let's start with you. Legislation sponsored by Chicago State Representative Justin Slaughter would restrict the kind of minor offenses that police could use to stop a car, among them driving with an expired sticker, improper lane usage, defective mirrors, or not wearing a seatbelt. And the concern from some lawmakers is that these so-called pretextual stops sometimes escalate quickly and disproportionately target African Americans, Latinos. But you see this proposal as wrongheaded. Can you talk a little bit about that? Why is it wrongheaded?
Well, thanks for having me. And you're absolutely right. I actually think it's ridiculous. It's what you just cited are all against the law, or they're in the current Illinois Vehicle Code, right? So these are lawful traffic stops that officers make that they're trying to eliminate or reduce. And if you want to change the law, my position has always been, and the same as with Kim Fox when her office policies, is go to Springfield and get it changed. You know, they're not doing that. They're putting their policies in or floating their ideas. Now, he's pulled that back somewhat, Okay, he said he's not going to run it, but I can tell you that probably isn't true. He's just not running it now. But as you probably know, Craig, there was a law that was I think it actually went into effect where you're going to get free passes for three citations. So that's just a version of the same statute that he wanted to pass in the first place. So what's happening is instead of defund the police, they're backdooring this by passing legislation that takes tools away from law enforcement.
Well, let's talk a little bit. I want to hear what the others think about this. Former Chief Roy, talk to me about why you think it's important to be able to make stops like this, assuming you do.
First of all, I'm going to confirm what Chief Wetzel said. They're against the law. The law is the law. You can't selectively enforce the law. When you start going down that road of selectively enforcing this, but not that, it causes all sorts of ripple effects in the criminal justice system, which lead to even bigger problems down the road. What we're seeing with the recent rash of violence in Chicago, we're seeing crews that are using vehicles to go from literally one end of the city to the other and then out to the suburbs and back to the city to commit these heinous gun crimes. And trust me, they are not obeying the traffic laws. It's not a pretext if you see a violation and you stop a car. That's what we want our police to do. That's what we want our beat officers to do. That is how they protect people. That is how they prevent crimes. And in the other end, that is how they solve crimes. They see a car, it's got missing taillights. They go to stop it. They find out that it's just been used in an armed robbery. You know, you're taking a valuable tool away from the police. And trust me, if you've anybody who's driven at night or even during the daytime, I dare them to tell me how many people they've looked at. Can they tell the race, the sex, or any other distinguishing factors of the driver of that vehicle from the distance? We all know the answer to that. The claim, the basis for this legislation is preposterous.
Well, William Joyce, the fear of a number of people is that, first off, let's look at it from the police officer's side. Vehicle stops are among the most dangerous thing police officers do. They're fraught with the possibility of things going sideways. So if you're stopping somebody for a sticker, a bad sticker, or not making a turn properly, that's not really, I mean, is that really what you're looking for? Or is that a possibility that you're walking into something else?
That starts the stop. We're all familiar with something called a Terry stop. Terry versus Ohio, I believe it was in the 1960s, where they were challenging a stop and frisk, but it was reasonable cause or reasonable suspicion was what a traffic stop or a stop was always based on. And both Tom and Roy talked about tools in the toolbox. We've had too many of our tools removed. I began my law enforcement career in 1973. And I've seen a lot of changes, but there have been changes to the good. The foundation of our training, and I started in the Chicago Police Department in 1973, was aggressive and preventive patrol. And there has to be two elements present for a crime to be committed, opportunity and desire. And the elimination of desire is very difficult, but aggressive prosecution is meant to reduce the desire to commit crime. And then education and aggressive patrol can greatly reduce the opportunity for a crime. So the two elements to commit a crime can be taken away or individually with aggressive and preventive patrol. And these laws are restricting the police from operating with aggressive and preventive patrol.
But how do you keep that aggressive and preventive patrol from becoming more of what some people would say is oppressive, because the police are expecting to find criminal activity or are prepared for it, and people who are in the car may not be. engage in an activity, but things could get out of hand.
That too falls back on training. The officers today have a lot more training than in previous years. Even when I started in 1973, our training was I was in a class that was somewhat of an experiment. They took college graduates, they took police cadets, and they put together a class, and we went through 1,365 hours of training within the Chicago Police Academy. Previous to that, the number of hours that were expected in training was 400 hours. So again, training is important, and I believe that police departments today, the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standard Board keeps a real close eye and watch on the officers that end their training. And the mandates that we have to train on a regular basis. We have certain mandates that we have to meet annually, including up to police chiefs. Everybody has to keep the training going on, and that's where it can be helpful as far as restricting and keeping the police officers in line. I agree with Chief Roy when he talked about most of the time you see the car, you don't necessarily see the occupant. And if there's a violation of the car, then of course the car's under the control of the driver, and that's where you make your stop.
Tom Weitzel, let's talk about a real life example of something going wrong. And I preface what I'm going to ask about by pointing out that this is a case that is being investigated by COPA and by the police department, and there are a lot of questions that are not answered in this case. But this was a traffic stop where the car was stopped because it allegedly because the driver wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and ended up with a person being nearly 100 bullets were fired, and someone was killed. That is the kind of thing that makes people want to pass a law like this, saying somebody being stopped for a seatbelt violation shouldn't end up dead. What do you say to people like that who say this is not how this is supposed to go?
Well, we missed a really important piece there. First of all, the traffic stop was lawful if you didn't have the seatbelt on, and the police officer was shot in the line of duty. You know, we miss that all the time. That officer, that CPD officer, was shot. They returned fire from what I saw in that video. Gene may know more than me, being a former Chicago police commander. But the officers were responding. There's this narrative out there that they just stopped this car and all of a sudden just opened up fire. That's just a complete false narrative. That didn't happen. The officer was shot in the line of duty. The amount of rounds that were fired by the officers, that is debatable by the amount of officers that were there. But they're reacting to one of their fellow officers being shot in the line of duty. So that narrative being put out there that the police did a pretextual stop and then just assassinated this individual in the motor vehicle is completely a lie.
Yeah, and I don't know that there is a general narrative, at least within the news coverage of this, that he was assassinated. But I do want to say, if someone is being stopped, and this is, again, a question that has to be answered by the investigation, but if a car is being stopped for a seatbelt violation, what happened or what we saw in the video was officers, one car stops that car by blocking it, and officers get out with their guns drawn. That doesn't look like a stop for a seatbelt violation. I mean, one could speculate that they knew more about the car they were stopping than has come to light yet, and that might come out. But what do you do? I mean, should a situation like that wasn't just seatbelt, was it?
It's probably good police work too. I mean, you're stopping suspicious vehicles or vehicles that match descriptions of violent crimes. An officer's not getting out with the gun still in his holster. So he may have saw the individual with the no seatbelt, but they have intelligence, and that's what they're supposed to do. They have their observations. They know the neighborhood they're policing. And let's be realistic. Absolutely. They're going to at least have their weapon by their side, and probably in that type of case. And as it was, the offender had one ready to point at the officer as he walked up to the car. So, you know, there's a lot more to come out in that case, for sure. But some of that narrative being put out is just is about as anti-police as you can get. I mean, even the information being released by COPPA, you know, which is supposed to be an organization that withholds, is confidential in their investigation, in my opinion, is anything but confidential in this investigation.
Chief Roy, do you want to say something?
The thing I want to put in, again, building on what Chief Wetzel said, the individual stopped was stopped for violation of Illinois law, okay? It's that simple. How did he choose to react? He didn't react by giving the officer a driver's license, his insurance certificate. He responded by opening fire on the police officers. Game, set, and match. Let's not lose that, you know, in the wave of propaganda that's been put out by the anti-police people. He chose to respond by shooting an on-duty Chicago police officer. You know, and also, let's look about another point that Chief Wetzel brought up. You have to consider the environment where you're at. Does this happen in Chatham, or does this happen in the 11th District? The 11th District, one of the most violent places in the United States, and the murder rate is just incredible. You know, I worked there 36 years ago. I worked there as a beat officer, as a TAC officer, as a homicide detective. The level of violence is incomprehensible out there. The officers were justified in protecting themselves, making a stop, and as it should be, as events proved. And I'll put this in context, too. It's not far from where Larry Newman was murdered last week. Retired Chicago police officer was murdered while working on his lawn. You know, maybe a mile and a half away from where Jemani Rivera was shot, murdered. You know, you have to put it in context. What would you do? How would you respond if you were an officer working in that spot? You know, what's reasonable? Mm-hmm. And I think the facts speak for themselves in this case.
Chief Wetzel knows this about me that you might not. I have a son who, at least up until a couple of weeks ago, was a police officer for 7 years, and traffic stops were what he did for a living. And he and I have many discussions about these kinds of things. I think William Joyce pointed this out. There are different kinds of training that may be given these days, but are there better ways to do this where if you know you're going after a suspicious vehicle, you simply treat it like it's a suspicious vehicle and don't say, well, it was because he was not wearing a seatbelt. There was something else going on there. Are there different ways of doing it where the tensions aren't heightened every time?
Working in the south suburbs, and we're a smaller department. In Chicago, you knew the cavalry was just a few blocks away, so when you're making a stop, somebody was coming to back you up. In the suburbs, we don't have that luxury. So the suburbs, we have several one-man cars or two-man cars, not heard of, where I was working. And so we always had, I encouraged our officers not to get out of the car until another officer was there. Sometimes you would pull a car in front of the stop car, sometimes double up behind the stop car, and then approach from two sides of the car. But that, again, that goes into training and that goes into experience. But I do believe that officers are far better trained today than they've ever been. And I do believe that their protection, and when you talk about approaching a car and the person opens fire, the number of rounds that are fired becomes inconsequential because it was an active gunfight. From my understanding, there were that the offender who was shot fired 10 times. So if there's three people there and there's 10 and that person fires 10 rounds, it's an active shootout.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking with a trio of former police officers about an anti-police trend that they see in some legislative proposals and new laws. Tom Weitzel is former police chief of Riverside. William Joyce is the former police chief of South Chicago Heights. And Gene Roy is the former chief of detectives for the Chicago Police Department. Let's move on to a couple of other potential issues here. There's legislation now that is before the Senate that would increase penalties for fleeing police. Senate Minority Leader John Curran of Downers Grove says that should be now a Class 3 felony. What do you think? What do any of you think of that as a new way of dealing with people when they encounter police? Tom Weitzel?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Fleeing from the police is an epidemic now. I mean, it's almost happening all the time. There's basically three forms of it. You don't stop at all when the police light you up, or the officer stops you and they get out of your car and walk towards your car and they flee, or they're fleeing from a crime and they don't stop until they crash. I'm sure you yourself hear it in the news all the time. So there's very little consequences in Cook County. So I would like to see the state law passed, but they'd also have to enforce it. Because these statutes are being put on the books, and in Cook County, some of them aren't being enforced. And that's because we have to go through the felony review process to get that approved. And, you know, the felony review process is not something that happens in every county in Illinois. So if they do pass this and it is adopted, it needs to be addressed and it needs to be enforced, not just something that somebody gets a soundbite on or a headline.
And for any of you, do you think making something a felony is going to stop it from happening, or does it simply encourage more chases?
Police chases are not allowed in under most circumstances. Although under the circumstances, what our policy is that unless you're pursuing someone who was involved in a forcible felony, then you have to back off. I do think the actual enforcement of the fleeing the police is going to be difficult because the police cannot chase unless there is a forcible felony. So it's almost not consequential to just find them. But again, anything on the books is helpful. And getting felony charges, just as Chief Weitzel had mentioned, is very difficult. We're hoping that we know that we're going to have a new state's attorney soon, and we hope that state's attorney makes some changes with some of the laws. Because one of the things that I looked at when I saw what this discussion was going to be is shoplifting, where it used to be a felony for shoplifting with more than $300. Now they raised it to $1,000. And most of the shoplifters, the stores that are not even prosecuting, it's become ridiculous. And again, in the area where I have been serving, we're losing retail stores because we're at the far south end of Cook County. So a shoplifter gets a slap on the wrist in Cook County, and they go half a mile to a mile south of us to Will County, where they get actual jail time. So what we've done is we've inherited the shoplifters from Will County coming into our municipality to shoplift from our jewel store, from our Walgreens. And again, in talking about state's attorneys, I believe that that's one of the issues that we're really going to have to talk to the next state's attorney to see if they can bring it back to a $300 felony for shoplifting and some jail time.
I think that's an issue that is what got Tom Weitzel and I together for the first time. Is it not possible that people who are lower level, and yeah, I admit it's kind of a myth to say it's just somebody stealing a loaf of bread to feed their family, but isn't it a possibility that people who are much lesser threats to society are getting snared in this when there are bigger fish to fry, and when prosecutions, someone might argue, shouldn't be about more violent crimes? that could go unaddressed.
Let's talk about the impact on the community here. First of all, my experience when I came on, I saw a lot of that, you know, the less fortunate shoplifting food. And I'll tell you something, a lot of cops I know, a lot of cops I saw, they generally gave people like that a pass. But we're not talking about that anymore. We're talking about organized crews that are going in, literally taking over Walmarts, Kmarts, major stores like that. And it's not stealing survival food. It's stealing luxuries. It's stealing alcohol. It's stealing steaks, chops, and stuff like that. It's not a survival crime. This is out and out thievery. Now let's talk about, you know, there's problems prosecuting that with the state's attorney. We've talked about the state's attorney at length. We don't need to go down that road anymore with this. But I'd like to point out, take a look at what's happened in Chatham. Those stores that came in there, Walmart, Kmart, some of the others, were touted as being the engines that were going to drive the economic redevelopment of not just Chatham, but Englewood, the entire South Side. These are major, you know, Fortune 100 companies. They couldn't take the losses. They closed. They left those neighborhoods. Who suffers? It's the communities. It's the decent, hardworking people. They're the ones that are suffering as a result of this lack of law enforcement, this tolerance, saying, no, we're not going to prosecute anybody for shoplifting unless it's over $1,000. Well, you get a group of 20 people together and they each steal something that's worth $50. You've got your $1,000 threshold right there. But in the name of addressing issues from the past, our prosecutor has decided that she won't prosecute at all. She's not doing anything to improve the safety of the community, the vitality of the community. And if we don't have vital communities where there's stores and schools and it's safe to go to school and it's safe to go to work, you can ride the bus or the L without having to worry about a band of marauders sticking up everybody on the bus, those communities are going to die. And you know what? And then what happens? These poor people that live in Chatham, Englewood, Roseland, what do? They have to go out to South Chicago Heights. They have to drive to Will County or Kankakee, where they can get decent food at a decent price. And of course, they're paying through the nose for gas to get out there to do it. You have to look at the entire. Crime is not the only contributing. Shoplifting is not the only thing that's driving the decline of the city. It's the impact on the quality of life. If you had quality of life, it raises, you know, a tide lifts everybody. Rising tide lifts all the ships in the harbor. But what we're seeing is the exact opposite. And that's what you have to look at. That's, to my way of thinking, it's even more important than locking somebody up. Look at the long-term effects. It's destroyed those communities.
Tom Weitzel, what can be done moving forward? And as all of you have pointed out, there's going to be a new state's attorney, one way or the other, whoever it is. What are the kinds of principles that need to be in place to keep the balance so that it's not police in some cases over enforcing and being too hard on people and making people feel afraid of them and not too lax so that the criminals can just run free?
Yeah, I would say there's like really two important positions, or at least two policies they should have. It's not this tough on crime state's attorney. It's just enforce the crime. Enforce what's on the books now. Just enforce what comes in front of your felony review unit. You know, the current legislation needs to be enforced. And second, the next state's attorney needs to build a really good relationship with the police in Cook County. Obviously, Chicago has a lot more volume than a lot of the suburbs do. We all have the same type of crime. We just don't have the volume that the city does. No question about that. But they need to build a better relationship with the detectives, beat officers, and Because, you know, unlike Chicago, a lot of times the felony review process is being called in by beat officers in the suburbs, you know, and you would get on the phone and they want detectives, where a lot of these suburbs don't have detectives working at 10 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the morning like Chicago does. But they need to get that relationship with them and get those cases worked up or charged up through the felony review unit.
That's going to have to be the final word. We are out of time. But that was Tom Weitzel, former Riverside police chief. I'd also like to thank Gene Roy, formerly of the Chicago Police Department, and former suburban police chief William Joyce as well from South Chicago Heights. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on our homepage. You can also find our podcast on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.